Hey everybody, this is Jonathan Ogden, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for West Coast Bias, the show brought to you all the way from the best coast. It's the West Coast Bias, that is. Aw, yeah.
And welcome to another episode of West Coast Bias, the first of 2024. And now you might be saying, isn't it March yet? No, actually, I got it right under their nose there. If you're listening to this, this is one half of the show. A lot of solo podcasts since I moved to Arizona. But yeah, so West Coast Bias, solo edition with Jamal. Of course, West Coast Bias is part of the What's Brewing Network, along with all our other great shows. You have the What's Brewing Symposium. I was on there recently as a guest. If you listen to the opening, I guess I'm no longer a co-host with Mike, Jake, and Bill. I guess I am now back to guest status. Boo-hoo-hoo. Before the last episode, we discussed the goings and comings of Chip Kelly after, God, has 7 or 6 years? Who knows? But yeah, so listen to that episode, where the guy, where all four of us, Bill, myself, Jake, and Mike, spoke about Chip Kelly moving on and the hiring of Deshaun Foster. And also, there is the Cal show where Jake and his daughter Megan on the Bare Minimum discuss her life at Cal Berkeley, where I am an alum, a former student myself. Go Bears! I'm sure they'll touch on what an exciting basketball season they've had, where they've gone from the depths of being one of the worst teams in all of college basketball to getting turned around thanks to the Mike or Mark Madsen, as Jake corrected me in a thread. So those are a couple of shows. And of course, recently we had a B-show appearance, much like myself, has been on hiatus for different reasons. But of course, with all the news with going on at UCLA, with Chip Kelly going out and Deshaun Foster being hired, there was even a little blurb of the B-show on the What's Brewing Network. But this is West Coast Bias, where I and Jake talk about LA sports. Yeah, mostly Dodgers, mostly Lakers. So just to help Jake out a little bit here, we're going to call this the In and Out edition. No, we're not talking double-doubles animal style with a side of fries and Neapolitan milkshake. No, I'm talking about what's been going on in sports, especially in the new year in LA. We've had a lot of guys coming in and a lot of guys going out, so this is why we're calling it the In and Out edition. First, let's start with the Dodgers. So the last time you might have heard my voice recording a solo podcast, it was about Shohei Ohtani signing with the Dodgers. Well, not too far after that, literally like a week after that, right before the new year. I jumped ahead. Almost a couple days after Ohtani signed, the Dodgers pulled off a trade for Tyler Glasnow, the ace of the Tampa Bay Rays, to fill out the starting staff, because, of course, Ohtani would not be pitching this season thanks to a second Tommy John surgery. So the Dodgers really didn't need another staffer. If you recall last year, the starting staff was decimated with injuries, and they had to rely on a lot of rookies throughout the season, and it kind of bit them in the butt in the postseason, not being able to get anybody past the third inning in any of those NLDS starts in the three-game losing sweep to the Arizona Diamondbacks. So they get Tyler Glasnow and Margot in a trade for Ryan Pepiot, one of the highlights of last year in terms of the Dodgers staff, a young arm that they've tried to groom and who was helpful in getting the Dodgers to the postseason, but ultimately he was superfluous when you're trying to get an ace like Tyler Glasnow. So Tyler Glasnow, Manuel Margot in, and Ryan Pepiot out. And then, of course, fast forward to today, where the Dodgers actually the Dodgers traded Manuel Margot. He it looked like he was going to be part of a platoon, and then he ended up getting traded to Minnesota today. With that, opened up a roster spot, and immediately, super utility man that the Dodgers traded for last year at the trade deadline, Kike Hernandez, was brought back on a one-year contract, $4 million. You know, team-friendly contract. Sent some money over to the Twins to help them out to cover Manuel's, Margot's remaining contract. So, even Manuel Margot, Dodger legend, with the team for what seemingly a week of spring training, and then send out, which is okay, because the Dodgers were going to platoon him anyway. They can do that with at a lot more different positions with Kike Hernandez, and he's got sort of a cult status with the Dodgers in terms of how popular he is with the team. Some of the highlights, not surprisingly, Kike Hernandez is, I believe, fifth all-time in Dodger postseason home runs. I think he's got double-digit home runs. He's had some big moments in his first stint. Of course, went to the Red Sox, had some big postseason moment in 2021, literally a year after winning World Series with the Dodgers. So a lot of changes and with the Dodgers. So back to where we were after that trade, literally a week later, the Dodgers were announcing that they had signed free agent from Japan, the 25-year-old, let me see, make sure I'm pronouncing this right, Yamamoto, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, signed him for 12 years, $325 million. they had to pay a $51 million posting fee, but they were able to sign him right after Christmas. And so now the Dodgers again added to their pitching staff. Tyler Glass, now ace of the Rays. Yamamoto, who's considered, if not certainly the best pitcher in Japan, but the best free agent pitcher on the market. And certainly they were able to do that because, of course, Shohei Ohtani helped them out in attracting him to the Dodgers. And so now they had another starter among the staff. So I guess they made some other moves. They signed Teoscar Hernandez from the Blue Jays. Another outfielder, a left fielder. So it was thought that he would patrol left field. Margot would be on the right, but now it looks like Margot is out, so they can put Teoscar Hernandez on either corner outfield position, and of course the platooning with somebody like Kike Hernandez or Chris Taylor, both super utility guys. The Dodgers did get another staffer in James Paxton right before February, one-year $11 million contract. It's one of those Andrew Friedman situations where he's putting his faith in a guy who's struggled with injuries. Paxton had a pretty good early last season with the Boston Red Sox. Had his ERA below 3, and then a recurrence of an injury, but he tried to pitch through it. And then his ERA was closer to 16 in September. So we'll see if this pans out. Obviously, such a low signing, only a year. $11 million, that's really not a lot when it comes to free agency. So the Dodgers hoping this works out and he can be like a fifth or sixth starter, at least hold down the fort until, that's right, Clayton Kershaw re-signed with the Dodgers. 17th year with I believe it's a two-year contract with the second year being a player option. So Kershaw not expected to start with the staff in April because of shoulder surgery. He says the end of the summer, which is more like the end of July, maybe early August. So that's who's been coming in and out for the Dodgers. Of course, catchers and pitchers reported for duty last week. And in earnest, the spring training season started this past weekend with full player rosters. Shohei Ohtani is supposed to be making his spring training debut tomorrow, Tuesday, so I'm recording this on a Monday night. Shohei Ohtani should be making his debut for the Dodgers tomorrow, Tuesday, up in Glendale, Arizona. some things about Ohtani. It looks like he's going to be ready for the regular season. Yes, he had the Tommy John surgery. He's not expected to pitch, so there's the Dodgers DH for the season, and it's looking like he will be ready to start the season. So, of course, you'll get more Dodger news from me, depending on how things go. maybe not so much spring training news, of course, unless something big happens. But I'm really looking forward to this coming season, seeing how well they do. A friend of mine asked me, you know, how important is the regular season for the Dodgers? And really, it's like, well, we all know that you only need 84 wins last year, but realistically, about 88 wins to get into the postseason guaranteed. And that's all the Dodgers really need. So if anybody asks you what you expect from the Dodgers, tell them what I said. Call me in October, because that's really what this is about. As wonderful a season as Glasnow, Ohtani, Yamamoto, Kike can have, it's really about what they do in October. You know, if Ohtani wins the MVP, somehow Glasnow wins the Cy Young, and Yamamoto's a Rookie of the Year, it really doesn't matter unless somebody collects a World Series MVP, in my opinion. So that's the in and out of the Dodgers. In and out of the Lakers, they didn't do anything at the trade deadline, despite the fact that they're pretty much been unable to get themselves out of the play-in area. You know, they've been anywhere between 7th and 10th through 10th since winning the in-season tournament back in November. So they didn't make any trades. There wasn't anything there. The big story out of the trade deadline was that the Warriors approached about LeBron. LeBron nixed that deal after speaking with the Lakers and speaking with the Warriors. He was not interested in going to the Warriors. The other interesting tidbit from trade deadline is Daryl Morey, the GM or, you know, president of player personnel, called the Lakers about Anthony Davis. And Pelinka's response to that was, is Joel Embiid available? So there you go. So not much out of the deadline. So will they, since they didn't make any trades, the Lakers decided that they were going to look at the buyout market, and they decided to go with Spencer Dinwiddie. The Brooklyn Nets bought him out, and so Dinwiddie was available. He had a couple of choices. I believe he could have gone back to the Mavs, where he was 2 years ago for sure. I remember if he was with the Mavs last year, he might have been with the Nets, but 2 years ago for sure, when they went all the way to the Western Conference Final, Spencer Dinwiddie was part of that, winning a Game 7, defeating the Phoenix Suns. And so he, I believe he appeared at the Laker game, home, there was a home game, I believe, against the Rockets. He was next to Pelinka, and then the next day he had signed with the Dodgers, with the Lakers. And so then he was brought on. They did pretty well. The Lakers, won 6-7, right before the All-Star break. They had some big games, especially on the road, beating the Knicks and the Boston Celtics without both LeBron James and without Anthony Davis. Somehow pulled those two games out. Well, I think Anthony Davis played the second game, the Knicks game, but they were able to beat those two teams, which have been way better than the Lakers this season. And like I said, they won 6-7 going into the All-Star game, and then right out of the All-Star game, I think they've won one, lost one, won one, lost one. So it's been back and forth in terms of like winning games or losing games. So still mired in a little bit of mediocrity there. So if they don't kick it in high gear soon, then they'll be stuck in another play-in session where, unfortunately, right now they're in ninth in the Western Conference. So they would host a play-in game, but make it very difficult for them to even come close to making the Western Conference Finals. So we'll see how that goes. But again, really nothing going on there except for the Spencer Dinwiddie signing. So that's your in and out for the Los Angeles Lakers. Moving on to football, the NFL specifically, the San Diego Chargers had a dismal season. I said San Diego, didn't I? Gosh darn it. The LA Chargers, yeah, they're LA, so they still count. Jake will attest to having seen them at SoFi as the home team. So anyway, they fired their coach Staley in the middle of the season. Had an interim coach for the rest of the season. Didn't do well. Missed out on the playoff again. And so then they went out and got their guy, John Harbaugh. Damn it. Not John Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh. John Harbaugh is the coach of the Ravens. Jim Harbaugh lured him away from winning a national championship with Michigan in college football and brought him out to San Diego. I think that's a great move for San Diego. But the real problem with the Chargers has always been ownership. The Spanos family have owned the Chargers forever. They're part of the reason why they're in L.A. and not San Diego, because they could never come to an agreement in terms of getting a new stadium built, and basically decided to first have a shared stadium in the Carson area with the Raiders, and then the NFL owners didn't go with that and went with the Rams proposal. The Rams came to L.A., and then after a year, the Chargers decided to lease SoFi Stadium and play there, call themselves the L.A. Chargers. Of course, they had to wait for SoFi to be built, so they were playing in the Dignity Health Park down in Carson, where the L.A. Galaxy plays. So, you know, that's their little history coming to L.A., and they've struggled to find some consistency despite having on paper what's a talented roster, and certainly under Staley, who went from the Rams defense coordinator to the Chargers head coach. They were really never able to do much, and then when they finally got to playoffs, they humiliated themselves by blowing a 27-7 lead over the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, last year, and then not even making the postseason this year. So anything's better than that. And obviously Jim Harbaugh, he's got the bona fides when it comes to coaching, turning things around. When there's talent on the field, he knows how to get success from his teams. The 49ers, he took them back to the postseason and then to a Super Bowl, and only lost barely to his brother John Harbaugh and the Ravens. Let's see. After that, he went to after being with the 49ers, he went to Michigan, so we know how that turned out. Before that, he was at Stanford, helping them become a successful program, and winning a Rose Bowl. So certainly a chance for him to continue to write his legacy by turning around the Chargers, or at least matching the results with the talent that they have on the field. So that's the in and out for the Chargers. With the Rams, obviously there's going to be some personnel changes as another season turns over. They did a great job of getting to the postseason. Nobody expected them to do that this year. Exceeded expectations by winning 10 games. But then they lost in that opening playoff round to the Detroit Lions, a game they probably should have won. A controversial call at the end kept them from winning the game. But they certainly improved this season, and most because of the turnaround from decline to going up against some of the best teams and doing well. I think the Rams will be a team to reckon next year. So, you know, I would imagine as the offseason continues, we'll hear more about different moves happening with the Rams. So that's your in and out for football. Of course, I can talk about college football. I mentioned it, that it was discussed Chip Kelly leaving, Deshaun Foster coming on. Don't forget to listen to that when you can, the What's Bruin Symposium. So that's college football. See you later, Chip Kelly. We hardly knew you. We hardly liked you. Let's see. Oh, yeah, hockey. So obviously this is the part where Jake cuts off my mic, but in hockey there was a situation 2 weeks ago with the LA Kings. The LA Kings started off, I think, with the third best record in the NHL, set a record for consecutive road wins to start the season, and then after that just cratered. They started off 16-4-4, and then I think they won something like 5-7-7, just cratered. Went from close to the top of the division, now fighting for a wild card spot in a really tough Western Conference. And so what they do, they get a win right before the All-Star break. So you think, okay, they'll take a break, they'll regroup, and try to figure this out again. Well, they fired their coach. Yeah, they fired their coach. They fired Todd McClellan. he'd been with the Kings since 2019, but they fired him at the point where you know, they were 23-15-10. So if there were 16-4-4, you do the math. McClellan was part of the turnaround after winning a couple Stanley Cups, the Kings, and then sort of trying to rebuild on the fly, making a couple playoff spots, but not having playoff shots, but not being successful. They bring in McClellan. It's a COVID year. They're not doing too well, but the front office rebuilds on the fly and gets them into the postseason twice, but they lose in the first round to Edmonton 2 years in a row. That's in 2021 and 2022, or sorry, 2022 and 2023. And then so many expectations this year for them to get over the hump and do better in the regular season so they could have home ice advantage for the postseason and maybe contend. They start off looking great, and it just all fell apart too fast. So Tom McClellan was fired. The last time the Kings fired their coach midseason, they won a Stanley Cup. That was all the way back in 2012 with Daryl Sutter. I don't think it's going to happen this year. There's no Jonathan Quick who can save them in the postseason. They turn things around. They just have an interim coach, Jim Hiller. They did turn things around. I believe they won five of his first six games that he coached, including winning some crucial games on the road against the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Boston Bruins. But we'll see. That a lot of the issues with the Kings who won have been injuries. Victor Arvidsson came back from injury, was instrumental in helping them win three games in a row, and then he had to go right back onto the LTIR injury report, the long-term injury report. They still aren't really set at the goalie. They've gotten some great performances, but neither Cam Talbot, their starter at the beginning of the season, and then this guy, last name Riddich, who's been really instrumental in helping them lately and playing a lot more than Cam Talbot, the guy who they thought initially was going to be the starter. But we'll see. They still are having trouble scoring. The hockey deadline, or I should say the NHL deadline, trade deadline hasn't passed yet, so there's still a chance for them to make a move. But we'll see if they have enough prospects or if they're willing to push in the chips to use their prospects or cap space in order to bring somebody who can really help them out, especially with scoring. I don't know where you're going to put them. I don't know who you're going to get, because they went from scoring like 3.5 goals a game to 2.1, which in this day and age when scoring is up in the NHL, that's not good. And that's been a lot of the reason why they've struggled. So despite the struggle with scoring, the chances of the Kings making the postseason still around 99%, because they started so strong. There really isn't anybody, I mean, unless they really wilt and go on a catastrophic losing streak. It doesn't look like anybody will catch up with them in their wild card spot, but also because of the tough division. I mean, Vancouver Canucks are really good. Edmonton's been really good. They had an 11-game win streak this season. So those are the teams in front of them. Vegas, of course, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. So that's who they have to catch up with. It's going to be a struggle for them to do that again, but they're probably not going to lose their playoff spot. But that doesn't guarantee anything going into the postseason, especially when they continue to struggle with scoring goals. So in terms of in and out for the Kings, in Jim Hiller, the interim coach, out Todd McClellan, who'd been with the team since 2019. and I know Jake, again, will poo-poo this, but my illustrious producer, but look up a goal by Quinton Byfield, the Kings' 21-year-old prospect, who was drafted at 19. They tried to get him on the team instead of sending him in the minors, but then he had some injuries, and he really struggled last year. And the guy who was picked after him look way better than him, a guy named Tim Stutzel for the Senators. But Byfield's been a revelation this year and has looked really good. So look up Quentin Byfield goal against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Trust me, you're going to really like that one. So look that one up. So that's pretty much been what's happened since the Ohtani signing in terms of who's coming in, who's going out in LA sports. Like I said, it's Dodgers season's going to start soon, start at the end of March. We'll see how Shohei Ohtani looks as a prized free agent of all of baseball. We'll see how the starting staff rounds out with the additions of Glasnow, Yamamoto. Again, my feeling is I think they'll be fine in the regular season. It's really about October. And, of course, we'll see how this Laker team can do. I mean, another playing game with semi-healthy LeBron and a fully healthy Anthony Davis, who's looked really good and has been probably the most consistent he's been since that first season with the Lakers. We'll see how they do. We'll see if the Kings do get in the postseason, like I predicted. And we'll see if they can actually do something or maybe pull off some upsets like they did the last time they fired their coach midseason. Well, I'm not too optimistic about how that'll turn out, but when am I ever when it comes to LA teams and the postseason? But just wanted to make a reappearance. Obviously, things are good and stable here in the desert for myself and my family, but I did want to touch on all these things that seemingly happened all at once in LA sports, and then to get back on the saddle and be more consistent with going forward in terms of the news. So lots to talk about, as always. Listen to the What's Bruin Network, the What's Bruin Symposium, the Bare Minimum, of course, West Coast Bias with your host here, and the occasional B team drop. But that's it for me today. It's kind of a short one. More of a recap, and then we'll, you know, when you hear me again next week, we'll talk some news and all the things that are going on. So with that, as we always say here on West Coast Bias, we're the West Coast, we're the best coast, we're West Coast Bias.
West Coast Bias.
Dude, Rob, we place a ball on the West Coast.